Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to the Dr. Raj podcast with Dr. Raj Dasgupta, a show all about educating patients, students, and aspiring doctors about better patient care. Dr. Raj is a quadruple board certified physician and associate professor at the University of Southern California. He was a co-host of the TNT series Chasing the Cure with Ann Curry, as well as a regular on the TV show The Doctors. And now, here's our show.
Hi, and welcome to the Dr. Raj podcast. And what is this a podcast of? Of happiness and wellness, of amazing stories, wonderful people. And with that theme in mind, you know what makes people happy? Music makes people happy. And for those who don't know, my middle child, Aiden, God bless him, I love him so much, he has autism. And one day, his music therapist, who comes over, who I think is super cool, that's why she's the guest today, put huge, big smiles on his face. And I just had a light bulb that, wow, you know, music affects so many different people. And I approached my guest today and found out that, you know, music is not only one of the biggest passions for her, but she brings this passion to people with Alzheimer's, people in hospice, special needs kids. So I thought this is worthy of a podcast. So before I introduce my guest, I got to read the bio. Okay, so bear with me here. So we have Sarah Martinez, graduated from California State University with a bachelor's in music therapy and became a board certified music therapist in 2017. She went on to work long-term at Professional Child Development Associates, where she treated children with special needs, adults with severe to profound intellectual disabilities, and individuals with dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Sarah also has experiences working in hospice, mental health settings, and with typically developing children. In 2022, she started her own business where she uses music across the lifespan with infants, hospice patients, and everything in between. She has trained in DIR floor time and music together. Sarah has a background in piano performance, voice, guitar, worship arts. She loves to combine her unique gifts to help those in need through using the music to create joyful and therapeutic experiences. And with that being said, Sarah, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. And thanks for having me.
Oh, you're super welcome. You know, it's nice to talk to you this way, and you're not holding your guitar in the garage. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
So let's do the meet and greet stuff first, okay? Sure. So I do want to know. So growing up, what kind of led your passion for music? Did you always know you would do music as a major in college? And with that being said, were you like in the high school band and stuff?
Yeah. So as far back as I can remember, I love singing. Like I remember in kindergarten, like performing in the talent show at my school, singing on stage. And yeah, I would say singing was something that I always did. My parents tried to put me in piano lessons when I was younger, but I just wasn't really about it. And I appreciate that they kind of let me figure out what I wanted to do and didn't like force me to be a part of instrument lessons. And then as I got older, I got really into dance and musical theater and things like that. So I was actually really serious about dancing and was like trying to get into this fancy art school for high school. But then when I was 13, I had a knee injury, which you as a doctor would know better about exactly what happened. But basically the muscle that holds my kneecap in place, like it tore. And so my kneecap kept dislocating when I would dance. And so I ended up I've had two surgeries on it since then. So basically as a young, like when I was like 14, 15, I realized I can't dance like in any kind of professional capacity. But it was at that time that I started becoming more passionate about music. I was essentially like, I need a new hobby since I can't do as much dance. So I started really I started learning piano then and guitar and honing in on my vocal skills. And so I was not a part of like the marching band or anything like that.
You didn't go to band camp?
No. I went to like musical theater camps and things like that. And did the whole musical theaters stuff. But yeah, I didn't do marching band or anything like that or jazz band. I wish I did. That would have been a great experience.
So were you playing piano and guitar and singing in high school? Or is that something that you did after high school?
Yeah, I was doing it in high school and I got pretty connected at my church and in the whole worship arts world, which is kind of, it's essentially like contemporary rock music.
Like you and Amy Grant or something?
Contemporary Christian music is kind of like rock music essentially. So I was playing on a band there and that was where I started, you know, really playing guitar and singing for people.
Okay.
But yeah, that was kind of what got me really more passionate about music, I think, coming out of high school and what kind of pushed me, I think, into deciding to declare a music major.
So, I mean, I didn't know about the knee injury. I mean, you held that back in our little pre-interview. But so was it something like in the movies where were you performing on stage? Then all of a sudden you went for some kind of triple axel. Then you landed on your knee and it blew.
Thankfully, it was not like that. That would have been embarrassing. But no, I just was like stretching after class one day. I was like stretching my back in one of those back bend stretches and my kneecap just like popped out of place. Which I found out later that my legs, the way that they are sort of the bone structure just kind of lended itself to be more vulnerable to an injury like that. So when it was under a lot of stress and I guess not properly strengthened or something, I injured myself. So yeah.
Wow. So how old were you for your first knee surgery?
I was 14.
Wow. You're young, man. Wow. I'm learning more about you just doing this interview. I'm liking you more and more. I'm gonna let you know that. Okay. So, you know, on that whole theme of music, I'm just curious, you know, I think you kind of answered it, but you know, what type of music influenced you the most? And you know, me and Michelle, my wife, Michelle, we're huge Adele fans and stuff. So a little bit her more than me, but who influenced you? Who's your favorite artist and band and stuff like that? You know?
Yeah, gosh, that's such a hard question for me. Cause I feel like I listen to all different types of music with the work that I do. But I would say, especially like talking about influencing me to do this as a part of my career, I think that the music, Christian music, spiritual music, just has like such a strong emotional, spiritual attachment. And I think that music is that for so many people, you know, like people love music and it moves them and maybe not everybody's able to identify why it moves them. But I think I just connected a lot with that kind of music because it was just so, I don't know, personal, spiritual, emotional. I would say like contemporary Christian music probably had the biggest influence on me feeling passionate about music in general.
Well, I love when you sing Adele. I don't know if that's one of your favorites.
I do love Adele. She's
you do a great job singing that. And obviously Aiden, my son, loves it. So let's talk about explain to my listeners, explain to me, you know, what is the field of music therapy?
Sure. Yeah. Something I love to talk about because I think it can get really misunderstood. I've had people come up to me and they're like, oh yeah, like I played music for a sick person. Like I'm a music therapist. and I'm like, that's not what it is. It's like a real field. But essentially music therapy is an established health profession in which music is utilized in a therapeutic relationship to address a variety of things that could be physical and emotional, cognitive, or social needs of the individuals. And music therapy treatment is done by credentialed professionals, board certified music therapists. And we utilize evidence-based music interventions to accomplish a variety of different individualized goals within the context of that therapeutic relationship. That's
amazing. Therapy is. You know what? You've made me the smartest person ever now. I'm like, oh, I thought I was like, oh, she sings music to like, you know, some sick people. No, you're not a music therapist, but you're a nice person. So who are music therapists and why did you in particular go into this field?
Yeah. So like I mentioned, music therapists are credentialed professionals mm-hmm. that to become a music therapist, you have to complete at least a minimum is a bachelor's degree. So like a 4 to 5 year degree program. Okay. And a lot of therapists also have master's degrees. It's not required to practice at this point. I think there's a move to make that required, like speech therapists and occupational therapists, things like that.
That makes sense.
But at this point, or when I was doing it, all I needed was a bachelor's. And so, yeah, during those programs, you would receive training in music, clinical skills, psychology, development, and therapeutic approaches. So, and additionally to that, a part of that program is completing 1,200 hours of clinical experience, like practicums.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a fair amount.
Well, it's 1,200 hours of yeah. Wow.
So how it kind of breaks yeah. down is every semester yeah. you do practicums and then you do at least a 6-month internship after wow. you finish your coursework. And then you're eligible to sit for the National Board Certification Exam, which okay. provides you the title of the board certified music therapist.
That's awesome.
And so I would say what music therapists do and how it might be different from music teachers, because that's like a common misconception. And music teaching is something that I do also as a part of my business. And I love okay. doing that as well. But the focus is really different between what a music therapist is doing versus a music teacher. A music teacher is focusing on musical goals. Like we're going to learn the piano. You're going to learn this technique of playing this instrument. Right. Whereas a music therapist is focused on non-musical goals. Examples of that could be like increasing communication, decreasing anxiety, things like that, that they're not necessarily tied to music. And so how we're doing that is constantly, you know, assessing the emotional well-being, the physical health, the social functioning, all these different capacities of a person, and then designing music sessions for those individuals based on their needs and based on research, you know, as much as you can as well. And just some examples like of research-based interventions are music improv, receptive music listening, songwriting, lyric discussion, music and imagery. There's lots of different, there's research out there. There's a journal of music therapy, actually.
Wow.
But yeah, and then reevaluating those treatment outcomes and then adapting in the moment, obviously, to meet everybody, the client's individual needs.
So let's take that word individual. So this is kind of like my next question. Who are these individuals, you know, on your evidence-based medicine that are going to benefit from doing music therapy?
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, we've talked about a little bit how music makes people happy. And I love to say that like music to me is just a part of the human experience. I have yet to meet a person that doesn't enjoy or I don't know, doesn't at least listen to some kind of music or isn't around some kind of music. And so I think because of that, it can be effective throughout a person's life. And there's evidence-based research on infants in the NICU, like music therapists working with infants in the NICU, all the way through the lifespan to adults in hospice. So with that said, I don't want to say like everybody is appropriate for music therapy. As a clinician, what I'm looking for when I'm assessing somebody is you know, an interest, like a particular interest in music, that they're motivated by that modality, and then also a willingness to participate. And this happens a lot with the hospice patients I work with, that their families call me up and they say, oh my gosh, so-and-so loves music. They've always loved music. And then I go to meet them and they're just not really willing to engage with me. So that willingness to participate has to be there too. And that's sometimes a little bit harder with like teens and adults. With kids, usually they're ready to jump in when music is around. But then just a few populations where music has been proven to be like particularly effective are individuals affected by autism spectrum disorder, dementia, yep, Alzheimer's disease, children and adults with mental health challenges, special ed, substance abuse, trauma, pain management, and other genetic delays and genetic disorders. If your listeners have more questions on the research for those populations, they can check out the American Music Therapy Association website, and there's like some great links to blog or bibliographies with some research on there. So,
well, let me throw you a curveball question. I just kind of thought about this while talking to you. So I agree, many people will definitely 100% benefit from music. And, you know, I just found out on Facebook that you're me expecting mom. I'm so congratulations.
Thank you.
So my question to you is, some moms love playing some music so they can have the baby listen to it. Are you one of those moms? Are you going to play some music so the baby can listen to it? And have you done it with your first kid?
I didn't do that with the first kid. I feel like I read somewhere that it wasn't good to like blast sound onto your belly. But I can't remember where or if that's even true. I did, and I do sing all the time. And so I guess in that sense, I know, you know, the baby is supposed to be able to hear you in the womb, your voice, yeah, and familiarize itself with your voice. So in that sense, I would say my daughter was definitely surrounded by a lot of music, and like, you know, I was playing the guitar right on my belly. So,
oh yeah, totally. You rest it right there, right?
Yeah. I was resting it right there. So she loves music, and already she's not even two and she can sing in tune, which,
no way,
is like crazy to me. It's loose. She comes out of the key a little bit sometimes. Yeah, so I'm hopeful it'll be the same or similar for my second one.
Okay, no. So now back to the interview. So what led you to work at the Professional Child Development? I like to know that.
Yeah, well, like I had mentioned earlier, music therapists need to complete that 6-month internship, at least
yeah,
6 months,
that. Uh-huh.
A little longer. But I ended up getting an internship there after my coursework at CSUN. Mm-hmm. And they ended up hiring me like right out of my internship. So I just had a great experience there. I blended really well with the staff and they wanted me to stick on the team. And yeah, that was a wonderful experience. The team there, it was a great experience of working with an interdisciplinary team. And that was where I encountered your son.
Yes.
And I had worked with so many great families, some really challenging cases. But I think I needed that experience to be able to kind of go off on my own and have the confidence as a clinician that I can work with a variety of people and what I have to offer can be helpful, you know?
So let me ask you kind of a personal question for both of us. You know, I meet you because I walk in the room and Aiden, who has, you know, behavioral autism, and he has his good days and bad days and benefits and not so many benefits. He could get angry. He could not pay attention. He could make noises. He could jump around. He could be tough sometimes. You know what I mean? And what part of your job when you're there and you are so calm, you always smile, you take his hand and you make him strum the guitar with you. What part of that brings you the most joy and motivates you to work with kids with special needs?
Yeah. Gosh, I mean, talking about Aiden in particular,
sure.
I've known him for so long. I met him when he was 2 and he's nine now.
Yeah.
So I think there's something really beautiful about the long-term clinical relationship where I get to kind of know where he came from and see where he's headed and all the growth in between. And I think something I didn't know as a young clinician was that it just takes time. All of this the progress, especially with kids with special needs. Kids in general, like they're growing and they're developing and it takes time for them to learn new skills, but particularly when there's some kind of neurological delay or something that has happened there, it takes even longer. And sometimes you can lose hope that they're going to get there. But as I have gained more experience, I've realized that patience is well worth the wait, to see those things happen. So I think, and you're right, like I totally have sessions, especially with that population, the kids with special needs, where sometimes they're just checked out the whole time and I'm just really trying my best to engage them and they're just not interested on that day. And those are hard days. Like they draw a lot of energy from me.
Yeah.
But definitely what keeps me going working with that population are those moments where like it clicks for them all of a sudden and you have a great session or even just a great 5 minutes where they're singing with you and you realize, wow, all this work I've been putting in, like all this energy is meaning something for their progress. And it's meaning something more so than just like progress on a goal that I've set. It's meaning something for their happiness, for their quality of life, and just for their general engagement. So.
No, I love that. And, you know, the follow-up question to that is my dad, it's not a big secret, he has pretty bad Alzheimer's. It sucks. Mm-hmm. I wish it on nobody, you know? And that's something that really I really love about when I was talking about being on the podcast. How is it playing with people with really bad Alzheimer's? Because I do say, you know, I always tell, you know, my daughter, my son, and when we go visit, hey, Dad, Grandpa may not remember, but for that one moment, he's really happy. I just feel it. Do you feel the same way? And what motivates you to work with older people with dementia?
Yeah. So I guess what motivated me, I had one practicum experience when I was in school working in hospice. And inevitably, when you're working in the hospice population, you're going to encounter people with dementia, Alzheimer's disease. I don't know. There was something about that I loved. And I think part of it is that people are really open to the deeper things in life when they're at the end of their life. They're open to talking about death and God and spirituality. And like I had shared in my background, that's already something near and dear to my heart. So being able to kind of have a space for that where I could impact people in a clinical way in those areas was really motivating to me. I think I've always also had, I've just always been, had a compassionate heart. So a lot of times people in their later years or when they're close to death, they might be really lonely. You know, you don't have a lot going on, you can't work. So that always, I think that my compassion for individuals in that kind of place also drew me to that field. In terms of particularly working with individuals with that diagnosis, with an Alzheimer's diagnosis, I think music therapy has gained a lot of notoriety with that population because people have seen videos on YouTube where someone comes alive listening to music and they're all of a sudden themselves again. And definitely I've had experiences like that where then that's been really cool where I'm singing with someone and one patient that I have in mind, she's pretty severe Alzheimer's.
Yep.
And like nonverbal, just losing a lot of the motor skills. She will pretty much like close her eyes and kind of not engage very much. But when music is around, she starts moving her feet and her hips. And every once in a while, she'll actually start singing with me, which is amazing because she's not talking anymore, really. Yeah. So I do have experiences like that. But I would be lying to say that that's every time I'm engaging with one of these patients.
Yeah.
Cause as a doctor and as somebody with someone in your life with this, it's like their sleep is disrupted. Sometimes they're on medications that are really throwing them off. So I might be seeing them at a time of the day where they are like really annoyed at me. Telling me to leave or, really suspicious of me.
Yeah.
So just like any other population, they have their good and bad days, but certainly I think music can be really impactful for individuals with that diagnosis.
I love that. So let's talk about you and your business. I didn't even know you had a business till we started talking about this podcast. So So what motivated you for starting your own company? And in that, when you're answering that, what's been the hardest part so far having your own company, you know?
Sure. I mean, I think what motivated me is a lot of maybe what motivates other people, the potential to be my own boss, work for myself, and to make better money than what I was making from working for like a larger corporation. But the onset of that was having my daughter and just kind of assessing my values and my goals as a mom and knowing that I wanted to be more present for her, but then also having these realistic financial goals of like, well, I need to make this much money. So yeah, it was a dream. I think that initially the hardest part was trusting in myself that it was actually going to work and that people were going to pay me for what I have to offer. That was the hardest part. But once I kind of got it off the ground, gosh, I feel like the word to describe it is just blessed. Like the whole thing has been such a blessing to me. And the amount of interest has been crazy. I actually feel like I have to turn people down all the time. Cause part of that is I became a vendor with the regional center.
Okay.
And so people, my name is on some list. And so people call me all the time looking for music therapy, but it's just been so encouraging to realize that people really want something like this. And as a part of my business, I do more than just one-on-one individual music therapy. I also work as a preschool music teacher and I lead a choir for kids with special needs. So I do a variety of different things. I teach them piano lessons and I have my individual clients and then I have a contract with a hospice agency. So but it's kind of fun doing lots of different things. I like that it's not all the same all the time. And I see little kids one day and then the next day I see somebody in their 90s. It's really cool.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of Shark Tank. And one thing I learned from watching it all the time is that you have the best problem right now. You're turning people down. You're getting too much business. That's a good thing, you know?
Yeah. And that's actually the hardest part right now is making the decisions about what are the right opportunities to take on. Cause like you had already mentioned, for your listeners, I'm a mom about to become a mom of two.
Yeah.
So, as much as I want to help everybody, and I have struggled with being like a yes man and saying a lot of stuff. So that's like been a big personal growth thing that I've had to really learn to just say no when it's not the right opportunity for me and try to pass it on to someone else. But that's a hard part sometimes.
Let me make sure I ask you this, and it's going to be in the show notes, but can you just tell me the name of your company and the website? I don't want to forget.
Yeah. So it's VIDA, V-I-D-A, Music Therapy. So, and that's the website is vidamusictherapy.com.
I went to it, saw your face on it. So, hey, we're kind of like coming to the end. I just want to have a couple of fun questions and a future question. So I just put this here because I really like the way you sing, you know, but you play the guitar and piano. Which one is your favorite? What do you like doing the most right now?
Definitely, I would say my favorite is probably singing. It's the most, I guess, personal and passionate expression I think that I have to offer. But second to that would probably be playing the piano, mostly just because I'm better at playing the piano than I am at playing the guitar. Like I have more classical training in that. Guitar, I really, you know, I know enough to accompany myself decently. And people that don't play guitar are impressed, but people that play guitar know that I can't really guitar or anything like that.
And, you know, last but not least, I always like to ask my guests, what's the next stage? And for you, it's going to be, what do you like to do in the future? Whether it be, and you could answer it as a mom or for your company. What's the next steps for you, Sarah?
Yeah. Well, right now it's just kind of growing my young family and taking the right opportunities to work while I'm doing that. So I think what I have going right now is it's good, it's manageable, but I'd certainly work part-time at this moment. And what I would love for the future is, you know, just to be able to reach more people. Cause like I said, there's people that are calling me all the time and I have like a heart for them. You know, they're telling me about their kids or whatever it might be. And I want to help them. And I just see such a large need, especially in the special needs community. And some of the, there's been some changes in the laws here in California that now regional centers and basically state funded entities will provide funding for things like music therapy. And so
it's a good kind thing. Of, wow.
It's great. Yeah. So there's kind of like a, I see a rush coming in the next few years of people just like wanting more of that service. So I would love at some point to expand into a corporation. Right now, my business is just me, so sole proprietorship, but eventually expanded to some kind of LLC or something so I can be hiring or subcontracting more people and just reaching more people with music therapy.
Well, you know what? I know you don't need more business just yet, but I'm going to say this out loud on my podcast that you do an amazing job with my son, Aiden. And I just don't go asking everyone to be on my podcast, but you really are. You have such a big heart and you're such a nice person and it shows. I don't have to ask you, it just shows. So you do a great job. I just know you're going to be successful in everything you do. And I wanted you to know that.
Thank you so much, Raj. It means so much for you to have me on here. And yeah, working with Aiden has been an amazing challenge and an amazing joy for me. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. And everyone who's listening today, I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Dr. Raj podcast. And if you want to find Sarah, we're going to put all her information in the show notes. And stay tuned for our next podcast coming in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for listening. This has been a production of Ars Longa Media. Our producers are Madison Linden and Chris Breitigan. Our executive producer is Dr. Patrick Beeman. This podcast is for educational purposes only and not intended for medical advice. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.